Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the History of Fresh Produce, the podcast series that explores the fascinating and often overlooked history of fresh fruits and vegetables. Here are your hosts, Patrick Kelly and John Parr.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the History of Fresh Produce. And today, Patrick, we have a special one, don't we?
Listen, it's always special sharing time with you, John.
It is. But, you know, it's extra special because this is a result of us messing up. We forgot to schedule a episode for this week, so we figured we're just going to hop on and do something a little different today. No major script, no major story, but we're gonna talk about a few things.
I think we should. And what I like about it is we're going to talk a little bit about history, but we're going to talk about what's to come and some of the other fun things that you're going to be able to enjoy as we move through 2024.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. So before we dive into a few topics that we'd like to discuss today, a little rundown on what we've been doing. So you would have heard by now Vikings with our special guest, Daniel Serra.
That was
Titanic,
fun.
Titanic, you'll have just heard last week. And coming up, we have some very exciting ones. We have the French Revolution. We have the Arab Empire. And of course, our next live stream. So we have a lot of exciting topics coming up. And I think that's what's coming to mind right now in terms of the rundown. Did I miss anything, Patrick?
I don't think you missed anything at all. I think that there's going to be a lot what's coming up, like you said. If you've just tuned in, you know, you've got some funny things. You know, make sure you check out the Viking episode. That definitely was a good one. Yeah, Titanic's coming, which, again, you know, I've been talking to people about that. I even had people reach out to me when I posted the cookbook on Instagram. Like, wait, what? Like, how are you getting all this information? And then even leading, you know, to some of the books that we've received, which we're going to talk about, you know, maybe how can you get these books? But, you know, we got the Harry Potter cookbook as well. And then, you know, I've got some books from Daniel Stone, the food explorer. So we've definitely had some unique guests on the show this year that have encompassed fresh produce in the American or global history, John.
No, it's true. And I think it's been a fun ride. I mean, it's only been, a bit over a year now since we started this series. And I think a lot of people have realized a lot of more history exists than what they would have otherwise thought. I mean, I always loved history, but marrying the two, I didn't think was necessarily completely possible. I thought, all right, maybe a few episodes you knock out of produce and history combined. But there's quite a lot of history there. Now, of course, we start off with tracing the origins of specific products and crops, but we've developed additional stories centered on bigger historical events with produce involved, which I think has added a whole different dimension to these well-known stories, you know, Titanic being a perfect example of that. Not that we're going to stop doing these crop histories, because we do have some of those lined up for later this year, but I think it adds a nice flair to get some familiar stories that have an interesting twist in it.
I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, what I like about this is that we're not just going to one specific thing. Because someone did say that to me. They said, how are you going to do all these crops? And once you're done, you're done. And I remember you and I talking about that. And it's like, there's so much to talk about. You know, when you look at the horse radio network, you look at like Equestrian. And I was telling you about that. Remember, I was like, man, I go, they've got shows that just focus on soil. They've got shows that just focus on grooming. Yeah.
I love a good grooming episode.
Hey, listen, if the Horse Radio Network can come out with 17,000 plus episodes on horses, get ready, because there's going to be 17,000 plus episodes on fresh produce, no matter if it's history, technology, the future. Heck, John, I told you, man, I'm starting a new company, everyone. Intergalactic Produce LLC or Incorporated, because they are going to need somebody to ship to Mars one day. And I just want to be the first person to have that company name. You know, I mean, regardless if I do it or not, I'll still be able to sell that name.
You're all about the space.
History in the making. history in the making.
You know, on the topic of space, you know, I did actually, per your request, start watching Interstellar.
Thank
I have God. Started.
It's a and long right in, like, movie. The first 30 minutes of the movie, though, you get it, right? Like, it's already talking about farmers.
The first thing it was a cornfield. I said, all right, here we go.
You're right. But you can't say it gets right into it.
Yep.
Like, it literally gets right into it.
It's the crux of the movie. It's the whole base, the foundation of it. So I'm not going to give it away yet. We probably will talk about it. So
I think it's a good one to talk about. I think we should have listen, again, we already did Disney.
We did.
Okay, fact or fiction. Well, maybe we do some real movies, you know? Let's look at what they bring to other spots, right? You know, what they would bring to an intergalactic world. Would a piece of dragon fruit taken up there, would it even, like, exist? Or would it just, like, as soon as it had gotten to the air, their atmosphere, gone. Or no atmosphere. We don't know what would happen to some of this produce. Like, could you imagine grabbing a banana and taking it off the ship, right? And, you know, when you're in a pack, right? And then it's like, as soon as you open it up, the banana just like instantly shrivels and turns brown. Like, we don't know what would happen to some of this produce if it was taken to space, because produce here is grown by aspects of soil, water, sunlight, right? So I just say, we got a whole list.
We need to get an
you think, just when you this. Think there's not going to be more episodes, okay?
We have to get an astrophysicist. Maybe not Neil deGrasse Tyson wants to be a guest.
Don't get me started, man. I love that guy. I would just be like, Neil, we don't need any talk. Just you talk for 20 minutes on produce and what you think.
I'll be fine with that.
Well, everyone, will take you into the stars. Let's go. I might have a little Obama in that one, though.
I was going to say, I think Obama snuck into that.
Obama snuck in on that one a little bit. But now, everyone, to the American people and the Intergalactic Society of America, we go ahead and salute you. I should have did that one on the presidents, dude. All right, stop. You're going to make me – it's way too early or late to be doing this. So let's talk about – you know, John – I want to talk about the membership club that we are going to start. You know, one thing I told you, I said I never wanted to start like a club. You know, I didn't want to do a Patreon. But what's crazy is we're having, you know, guests actually ask us now. Like, hey, do you guys have a private club? Like, are you guys releasing, you know, content in different places? And, you know, everyone, what's interesting is we do a lot of recordings, but yeah, you're right. Sometimes we do not release a lot of it, or even like the short videos. So yes, this is something that we are going to be working on for you. We do have a support the show page, but what we want to do is go beyond that. And we actually want to make a History of Fresh Produce membership club, to where you get to filter out more of the noise, because a lot of times through the Produce Industry Network and the platform, we definitely talk supply chain. We definitely talk about, you know, things that would not be in your wheelhouse. So this new membership club, which we don't have a date yet, it is coming soon. We're kind of teasing you with it right now. But John, why don't you talk about some of the, you know, the ideas we had, and then a couple of the possible benefits that you could gain by joining the HFP club.
Yeah. Can you believe it? People actually want to hear more of us.
I mean, mainly me, but it's fine.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to say it, but.
It's funny because someone said to me the other day, before we get into that, is they go, that John guy. I go, isn't he great? I go, and he's like, dude, he's like, it's like your history teacher from ninth grade. I was like, I know.
Am I supposed to take that as a compliment?
I did, because I loved my history teacher, bro. Like, I was just like.
So it's very subjective. Some people would be like, that ninth grade history teacher.
Not me, bro. Like, me in world history, I was like this. Yes? They're like, Mr. Kelly. I'm like, question. I'm like, Eli Whitney in the cotton gin. I'm like, my dad does oranges. And they were like, here we go again, right? Like, I was asking questions. Darn
cotton gin question.
I'm like, they're like, Mr. Kelly. I was like. So I used to pick oranges, and they're like, oh, God. They're like, this is world history. I was like, I know. My dad imports orange juice from Brazil. And they were like, God, Jesus. Next. I raised my hand again. Mr. Kelly, we're not talking about produce. And I'd be like, all right.
See, you have a deep history with history.
I have a deep history with history. I love my history teacher. I love my eighth grade history teacher. My ninth grade history teacher. I'm going to tell you something funny before we get into these benefits, everyone, because you should benefit off history. I actually failed my world geography class in ninth grade and didn't have to do that. I didn't understand it. It's because my girlfriend was in that class with me. So I got screwed on that one. Retook it the second time, got an A. But yeah. All right. History of Fresh Produce benefits.
So this is what happens when we don't have a script.
We just
go off over all kinds of tangents. But yes, so very exciting opportunities here that will come to all of you at the dispense of us, right? Because we are going to do even more effort in creating content and opportunities for you all to learn more and be entertained more, hopefully. So some of the things that we've been thinking about, I think there's some obvious ones with any membership that...
What's that? Obviously. What's the obvious ones? I want to know now.
Re-listening. You don't have to hear any more ads.
We have ads in the history of Fresh Produce?
We do.
What's the ad? Do you know?
Someone's not been listening to our episodes.
I want to know. I want to see if you know.
John Green Logistics.
Listen, we're going to take John Green Logistics out. No, I'm just kidding. We actually add, you know, it's funny, everybody. We add an ad in there because the ad is on the Monday show. Let me just talk about that real quick. So we actually, you know, we do have sponsors to the overall platform in the show. So you will hear an ad here and there. And what's great about that is, you know, John and I wanted a break in the middle of our show. So that's, again, why we put the ad in. We are going to probably remove that ad in the future because that we just moved that ad to the Monday show, John, if you've noticed. So what we might do is change that up a little bit. We do have, if you looked at our schedule, John, is it April 19th? April 19th. This Friday, April 19th, this Friday, we have a live stream for some breaking news. And that's where I think you want to get on that live stream. And then you'll kind of understand how, when, and why we're going to be moving forward with new ads. Okay. So please just stay tuned. And I know I've gotten some comments from people like, what does JGLC have to do with, you know, the history of fresh produce? But we got to remember 65, you know, plus year old companies, 100 plus year old companies of what these are. So JGLC, 60 plus years old, right? Three generations, family owned and operated business. Those are the type of companies that we want to support on the history of fresh produce, because those are the people that are making dynamic moves in our industry, creating content and trying to go above and beyond. So that's why you hear the JGLC. You might hear Arctic Apples. You might even hear Sunrays from the Vandenbergs, from John's company. But in the future, we're going to have real, real, real specific ads that get to history, fresh produce, and education.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just rounding it off in a more appropriate fashion, I guess. But there will still
be. You said rounding it off. Most people say squaring it off. Right. I like that it's like rounding it off like with your golf ball. Like
exactly.
you're getting me off topic, John. Like you ever notice too? I'm gonna say this to you. So when you go golfing, you square off your club to hit a round ball. Mm. I'm done. Stop.
No more geometry.
Potential benefits.
So we doesn't go listening.
Into tangents.
Actually, other things that we've been. Other things that we've been floating around would be bonus episodes. So we don't know exactly the frequency of that yet, but club members would get access to entertaining episodes like this one, where we're not having a script or anything specific that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about different history stories that have been in our mind, more bite-sized stories, questions and answers from our listeners. We have received questions from some of you over the last year, and we intend to try to answer that on these kinds of episodes as well. Early access to episodes, we're floating the idea. So not only will you get ad-free listening, but when we have more multi-part episodes like we did with Hawaii, for example, and actually what we're going to have with the Olympics this summer, so that'd be the first opportunity to potentially benefit from this, is we will roll out those episodes however, whatever that timeline normally looks like today. However, as a member, if we have a 6-part, 7-part series on a specific topic, you will receive those all in one time.
How?
You can binge them.
How? So how will they get those? That's going to be the question is, are they going to be on Spotify? Are they going to be on YouTube? Like, where are these bonus episodes and the History of Fresh Produce Club going to be? Where are they going to be able to find this?
Well, Patrick, I understand that this is going to live on the Produce Industry app. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so everyone, that's what we're trying to accomplish. We want to make it to where you don't have to get on your computer every time. It's going to be just like right now. You get on your mobile phone if you're, you know, not watching this at work sometimes, right? You can get on your phone and you can download the Produce Industry Podcast mobile application. That mobile application is going to have many aspects of the produce industry, but it's going to have a History of Fresh Produce Club link. It's going to be a lockable link. So it's going to be locked. You have to sign up for the membership. You got to pay for the membership. And then all of the audio, the videos, the stories will all start, you know, being in there. But again, right, that's where it's going to be a locked, I would say, template. So you're going to have to sign up, right? And we'll have some fun stuff for some of our new members. But we did this in a mobile application because we thought it would be better for on-the-road users, right? If you're in the car and not driving. You know what I mean? You're on the bus, you know, you're commuting, you know, and you're in the subway, you're in the trains. That's where we wanted to make it accessible for you. And what's great about the podcast app is it's so user-friendly. So you sign up, you go to the membership subscription page, you click on it, very, very easy. It's not hard. And then once you sign up, we get a notification and boom, it's off to the running. And the great news about this is you sign up for the HFP, you get the whole mobile app though. So you're going to get a lot more. You'll be able to start looking at other companies, researching produce, right? And then we have other podcasts on there. So you'll be able to see about the restaurant life. You'll be able to see about microgreens and CEA. You'll be able to learn about onions. We've got multiple other podcasts and hosts that'll be on this network as well. So you've got a lot. You got a lot coming.
Look at this value. Now, we're still developing all of this, so we don't have the complete details yet. There'll be a separate announcement leading up to the official launch. So definitely stay tuned. There'll be other benefits that we're floating around too. Something along the lines of a chat community, a dedicated chat community to just those members. So you fellow members can speak to each other, nerd out on history and produce because people like that love people like that, right? And then we'll also potentially have discounts and discounts specifically on books. So we're looking at partnering with a book enterprise or bookstore that could offer discounts to books that we mentioned during our episodes, whether that be authors we have on the shows or books that we're just mentioning when we're talking about a specific story that we reference because that's what we read when we were doing our research and things like that. So lots and lots of things coming there. We don't have everything solidified yet, but we did want to at least mention it today to you all in advance so you can get hopefully excited about joining this little cult of ours known as the History of Fresh Produce Club.
Let's go. So everyone, stay tuned. More to come.
More to come.
All right, what do we want to get into, John? You want to get some Q&A from our listeners? You want to give any updates or stories? I want to keep this to where people aren't saying, great, now we got to listen to these guys for an hour, even on their bonus episode.
But that's the whole thing. Maybe they do. But I'm not going to assume that. But I will say, so the eclipse. So, spoiler alert, we're recording this before the eclipse, but the eclipse will have happened by the time this episode comes out. So the eclipse was fantastic, or maybe it was horrible, whatever. The eclipse happened, and leading up to the eclipse, of course, I was interested in just the history, because there's a fascinating history between the eclipse and human history, of course, as a whole. But I had to just take a peek under the hood and see what kind of history there was between eclipse and ag and fresh produce. And as you would expect, eclipses have obviously a deep history all throughout human history. And obviously it has evolved to the reactions compared to today, where we're all staring at the sky, smiling and understanding what's happening because of scientific advancements. But before all of that, back in the ancient periods, we're talking 3,000, 4,000 years ago, these were polar opposite experiences. You wouldn't see groups of people staring at the sky, smiling. You'd see potential groups of people staring at the sky, screaming, panicking, thinking that the world was going to come to an end. You have to remember, for a lot of these civilizations, the sun and the moon were essentially their chief gods. So the fact that you see one of their gods, the sun, appearing to be dying in front of you is not a very good feeling. So there have been early connections between the eclipses and fears, obviously, that have been recorded. They're very limited, of course, based on how far you go back, but there's one clay cuneiform tablet from about 2300 to 1800 BC that was found in Mesopotamia. And I thought this was a funny story, where there is an element of farming involved in it. So these tablets document these events in the Mediterranean. And if there was a solar eclipse, essentially these high priests that would be the ones to decode the things that were happening in the stars and in the sky, they determine that if an eclipse happens, the king will die. All right, that's not very comforting.
He did not like that at all.
No. So, and obviously kings were even more critical back then compared to our leaders today. They were the fabric that kind of held everything together of these civilization societies. So to avoid this kind of fate, they thought it'd be possible within 100 days of the eclipse for the king to abdicate and live in the palace as a farmer. Okay, this is where the farming comes in. So they would put a substitute king in his place. And this king could be, and this happened in different civilizations within Mesopotamia. So sometimes it would be a condemned criminal. Sometimes it would be a very high elite noble of that society. But they, whoever it was determined that this person would become the substitute king, take the place for 100 days, give or take, again, depending on the specific civilization. 100 days would pass, and then that substitute king would be assassinated, fulfilling the prophecy. And then the farmer, or the real king, would then resume his rightful place on the throne, and all would be fabulous again. So there's actually records that researchers have unearthed,
wow,
actual messages being sent to the farmer asking when he wanted the king to be killed. And
wowzers.
It's pretty funny stories. And actually, once it didn't always go so well. There was one instance where this real king was kind of hiding away from public, and he wasn't able to dodge death that time. Apparently, the record shows that after having sipped a broth that was too hot, he died. I don't know how you die from that, but he died.
Listen, so, that's some strong broth, man.
It's a very strong broth. Who knows? Maybe a little poison was kicked in there.
Had to be.
The substitute king.
I had some strong broth that just made my, burnt my tongue.
Yeah.
A little hell of a Not pain. This broth. This is some broth, bro.
That was serious broth. And so the substitute king, which was a gardener, continued to rule in his stead. So great day for the gardener. Not such a great day for the real king.
No. The gardener, yes. King, no.
And then, once I'll finish off this eclipse thing, I just thought these were fun stories. So there was another story where Columbus, so by this point during the Renaissance, people start to figure out how eclipses work, the timing of them, a little more of the science behind it. So Christopher Columbus was a science man, and he understood this. And so during his voyage to the New World in 1504, he took advantage of this knowledge of an upcoming eclipse and basically used it as blackmail against who he considered to be uncooperative natives in Jamaica. So he told the Jamaicans that soon his God would take away the moon if they didn't give him food and provisions. And so the natives obviously just said, whatever, this guy's crazy. He can't predict what the God's going to do. So the eclipse occurred just as he predicted. And then the Jamaicans came running to Columbus with food and his crew. So, another way that eclipses have been associated with food and produce and such. And there's a few other stories, but we won't go on to that. Maybe there'll be a future episode where we do.
I think there could be a future episode on the eclipse.
Yeah, there's some wacky stories out there.
I'm just saying.
So those are some fun, of
story. Fun stories.
Fun stories. So what do you say? What should we do now?
You know, I would say, if, you know, as we look at it, let's get into some of the questions and then let's leave them on the hook for the next episode. But I say we go over some of the questions. We have questions after the fact, sometimes just because, you know, we're not able to get to them. So we'll get people that will actually send over questions and say, hey, you know, what about this? What about this? So I'd like to read some of the questions, John, and I think they're pretty cool. And then let's let them know pretty much, you know, when the next episode is coming out. But, you know, going back to the first, almost like the first episode, right? You know, and Citrus was the first, but Banana was in the first top, you know, five that we did. And, you know, one of the questions we had, if bananas had not been marketed so cheap from the start, would they have become as popular as they are today?
Ooh, good question.
That is a great question, because there are some times that, you know, even you listeners, when you go to the grocery store and you see produce very expensive, sometimes you don't buy it. Could you imagine at the start at, you know, bananas were $5.99 a pound? Like, you know, sometimes you see how jackfruit and dragon fruit and was in the beginning years because of supply and demand and things like that. So great, great question. I don't know. I have no idea, but I definitely think it would have made an impact for sure.
I think so. Obviously, if listeners listen to that episode, we talked about how the pricing was so critical to the people that are bringing the first bananas to the States to make sure they were successful. And so I agree that they probably would have become just as popular as today. Maybe the initial affordability obviously played a role in that more rapid, widespread adoption. But I think in time, it still would have risen to popularity of today, just purely based on the convenience of the fruit, the taste, all the nutritional values and such. So I believe it still would have become, maybe not as quickly, but it would eventually get there.
I definitely agree with you. Next question. Had the U.S. not annexed Hawaii, would another power have tried to? Would pineapples have become as a big crop on the island as it had?
These are thoughtful questions.
I think so. I think that the pineapples would still have become as big as a crop, because I think that they were experimenting too. Well, you know, they had the botanists there. They had, you know, agronomists. You know, like I told you, one of the books I have by Dr. Bartholomew, I mean, there's so much that was put into growing tropical items on Hawaii for sustainability. So I think regardless if it was annexed, you know, I think that they would still have grown pineapples and cultivated other items. Because as you know, going back to the Christopher Columbus days and everybody who had visited, obviously they were bringing things over. So I think so. I think pineapples would still have been big. And because of the culture too, you know, with some of the big guys like Dole and Del Monte, I mean, they made tourist attractions out of their pineapple fields. I mean, that actually is a tourist attraction, you know, if you're going to Hawaii. So I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a question of, so if the U.S. had not, who would have?
I mean, someone would have, right? Yeah.
I mean,
someone.
The four real powers that would have annexed Hawaii if U.S. had it. So the big players in that region were Great Britain, France, Germany, Japan. Now, France and England, we can knock right off because they essentially issued a joint declaration guaranteeing Hawaiian independence back in the 1840s or so.
Yep.
Although the U.S. sort of did the same thing. But that's a whole, just listen to the episode. You'll get the U.S. story. So I don't think they would be in Germany. They were involved definitely in that theater, but I don't think that between the four, I think Japan would have had the best opportunity. And the reason why I say that is because you actually had King Kalakaua, who we touched on our episode, who actually offered the Japanese emperor a plan to put Hawaii under the protection of the Empire of Japan. And he went so far as to offer an arranged marriage between his niece and the Japan's prince.
Uh-oh.
But Japan said, no, I don't think, you know, thank you very much. We appreciate the offer, but we don't want to basically.
We don't want it.
People in Washington. So that didn't happen. But let's say Japan did do it, right? So Japan would be the most likely alternative. So had Japan annexed Hawaii, pineapples. I'm eager to say that they probably would not have become as big a crop for Hawaii, only because pineapples were not something that Japanese were really very familiar with. And that was due in part, you know, at this point in time, Japan was had the isolationist policies. This is the sheer geographical distance from Japan, from the Americas, because remember, pineapples are native to South America. So pineapples, yeah, they would have become more accessible potentially to Japan over time, obviously,
with right.
Migration and transportation, all those things. But I think it would have remained more of a luxury item or an exotic kind of treat, not necessarily like a staple like in the West. Because the West, for the pineapple, and I think we're going to end up doing a whole episode on the pineapple, because that's a...
I think so, too.
The pineapple was this luxury status symbol for the West. You know, they would rent pineapples for their dinner tables. So this is not a joke. So completely different cultural relationship with the pineapple in the West versus the East. So I don't think it necessarily would have become as big on Hawaii had the U.S. not annexed in somebody else, a non-Western power.
Okay, got it.
That's my opinion.
That's your opinion and you're sticking to it.
That's my opinion.
Fine. All right. So could another crop besides lemons have contributed to the rise of the Sicilian mafia? Ooh. In your opinion, what crop has had the biggest impact on human history?
These are two questions.
Wow.
These are deep questions.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I'm going to let you start off on this one.
Okay, so for question number one with the mafia, so could there have been another crop besides lemons? So we explained why lemons was a key trigger crop for the development of the Sicilian mafia. But, you know, that was one piece of it. Obviously, there was a lot of other situations politically, socially, environmentally that were happening on Sicily at this period. So I think honestly, there would have been another crop that would have been used. There were other crops. Wheat was obviously a big crop on Sicily, olive oil. Obviously, they're not as easy to steal or to, you know, there's other challenges involved with trying to get into these other crop industries in terms of ease of transportation and stealing and manipulating and all these things. But I think something would have still given birth to the mafia. What do you think?
You think so?
I think so.
We'll give it to you.
As far as the crop that has had the biggest impact on human history, that's a that's a deep question. But
don't let John go on this one, everyone.
If I had to pick one today, based on things that we've discussed already up to this point in the series, again, you can make a case for a number of them, but I would probably go with potato. I think potatoes, if we just see how the potato drastically changed the direction of certain periods in history, the European continent, before the potato was introduced, it was really cereal crops. So oats, barley, wheat, and they were constantly susceptible to these environmental factors, you know, droughts, floods, pests, diseases, all these things. And in turn, that would lead to pretty regular crop failures and shortages, and in turn, famines.
Right.
Famine. We briefly talked about this. There was a famine almost every other few years, depending on parts of Europe. It was just, you know, you look at your calendar, here comes a famine.
Yeah, what's happening? Famine, you know.
Famine. So the potato drastically changed that. We had our special guest, Rebecca Earle, discuss this with us. Once the potato came in, you didn't have that same level of uncertainty as you did with the cereal crops. It was a lot more stable. And that really gave birth to more stability within Europe, food security, less to no famine. And so you have this boom in European empires. I mean, you can make arguments that this helped also feed the empires abroad, you know, whether it be the British Empire or the French Empire. The potato had a pretty significant role that fed the armies and the peoples of these empires, which in turn obviously had a big impact on the people that they eventually colonized, and so on and so forth. So
correct.
That would be my feeling.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you keep with that feeling. Listen, I'm gonna say that, you know, citrus was the main reason for the mafia. Okay, so yeah, I'm just saying, forget about it. All right, forget about it, John. Forget about it. Okay. So next one, in your opinion, At what point in history do you feel the role of farmers and farming became less respectful and noble than it had previously? Man, that's a great question. I honestly can tell you, I think that it's always been this way. I think that it's always been less respectful. I think that people, and we've talked about this in other episodes, John, that they're just peasant farmers. You know, if you go back to even, let's go to the Disney show, right? If you go back to even like Disney, look how they treated the peasant farmers versus royalty in some of the Disney movies. The people that were supplying the grain, the fruits, the vegetables, the workers in the streets, they're the ones that were treated like they were nothing. But yet they were the entrepreneurs. They were the one that was making things happen versus being a silver spoon. You know, think about, again, right? Think about like Aladdin, for instance. You know, think about what they had to go through to produce that fruit, to get a cart and put it on the side of the road to sell. And that's why, look, when Jasmine took that apple, she had no idea coming from the palace. What do you mean? We just take stuff all the time. Well, it took a lot. So peasant farmers have always been peasant farmers, and people have always looked down on them. And yeah, do I think that in America, like not we're not talking just straight fiction, but if you think of like going into America and going in through to the Depression, I mean, no, it's like they demanded it almost. You know what I mean? When scurvy was happening, oh, call those farmers, we'll get citrus, right? When things were happening, it was never held on a pedestal of, you know, food is medicine. These farmers, if all the farmers were gone today, what would we have to do to produce food? We'd have to do it ourselves. And I can tell you, man, I picked oranges when I was 15 years old, and I told myself, I know exactly the job I don't want to do when I get older. It's hard work. It's labor intensive. And, you know, people think that because it's hard work and labor intensive, then it's not the job that people prefer. You know what I mean? So I think it's always been that way.
Yeah, I think there's an element of truth to that. I think it also depends on obviously the time period and the culture. You know, we're talking specifically, obviously, the question obviously suggests that the job was respectful and noble at one period of time. And it was. You have, I mean, look at the Romans, right? We've talked about the Romans a few times in different episodes. It was a very respectful, noble position to be a farmer. You had emperors. We talked about Diocletian in our St. Patrick's episode, who grew cabbages when he retired from being an emperor. So there was certainly nobility and respectability in being a farmer. You have our founding fathers, Jefferson, Washington, who also farmed, not necessarily in hands in the soil farming, but they were still operating a farm. So when I think there was a period, as hard of a line as you can put on this, I think the Industrial Revolution really flipped it on its head, because at that point you have an emphasis on urbanization, technological innovation, expansion of industry and commercial sectors. And this, of course, then completely shifts everything away from agriculture. The social status of agriculture compared to urban professions and industries just flipped. So farming became, again, more industrialized as well, with fewer people involved in the physical agricultural labor. So the perception, of course, being that if you're not using technology or working in the technology space and you're using your hands and working on land, you're perceived as being less prestigious, less intelligent, less desired for whatever reason. Obviously, these are all perceptions. So by no means am I saying that's true. And so obviously, with the industrialization, you have the rise of capitalism, the commodification of food. No longer is it what it used to be, which is something that people are a lot more connected with. And I mean, we can go again, this is probably a whole other episode, this question alone, but you have, in addition to all of that, just the prioritization of profitability and efficiency, which completely also changes the face of farming once the Industrial Revolution hit. So there's a lot there, but I think that would probably be the period where you really start to see a shift of honor and respect from farmers from that point on. So if we look at today versus prior Industrial Revolution, so that would be my my feelings.
And John's sticking to it, everyone. So, all right. Well, I would say that's the last question. Those were some of the questions we had. So, everyone, I would say we appreciate all of your questions, your comments, how to grow our following together. That's one of the things, you know, we started this project as fun. That's what we have fun doing is doing these episodes, working with people. We've got some more fun stuff coming up. So, John, what's the next episode? And let's sign off.
Oh, gosh. What is that? Well, we have the breaking news on Friday, like you said. So stay tuned for that. That's exciting. And then after that, we have our live stream on lost civilizations to crop failures. Now, no better way to celebrate Earth Day than talking about civilizations destroyed by crop failures. So
that's good, though. I think so.
I think so. I think our listeners will find it enlightening. So definitely stay tuned for joining us on next Monday. We look forward to seeing you then. And so until then, it's goodbye from me, John Papp.
And myself, Patrick Kelly. Have a great one, everyone.